Okay, Brad, so can I tell you a funny story about the destruction of the world?
Oh, I'd love one.
So about a decade ago, a buddy of mine was an XO on a nuclear submarine. He was on an XO on a specific nuclear submarine. It was a boomer, which is the ones that carry the ICBM missiles, the gigantic world-ending missiles, you know, the ones that...
Oh, yeah.
And he goes, hey, do you want to come down? You're in San Diego. I'm in San Diego. Do you want to come by my boat? We're docked. We're doing retrofits. Do you want to come tour the ship? And I was like, heck yeah, I want to tour a submarine.
And of course.
So without revealing too much about what was going on with the submarine while they were retrofitting, I'll just say that he's like, do you want to go see the missiles? And I was like, I mean, I guess I do. I don't really want to see nuclear missiles, but I guess I do. And so he takes me down a lot of stairs and down to the back of the ship. And there's, I don't remember how many. Someone probably knows how many nuclear missiles are on a boomer. But let's just say it's 20 or 30, something like that, right?
Yeah.
But they're all shaped like gigantic metal tubes. But like in this room, it looks like a tree forest. A forest of metal trees. Like it's all these gigantic world-ending missiles. And yes. This was the incongruity of the whole thing. The irony of it was... scattered among all these world-ending missiles, Brad, there's an elliptical machine. There's a treadmill. There's some light weights. Oh, here's some free weights. Here's an incline bench when you want to do some incline benching. And here's a track that you can run around the missiles and stay in shape. And I would look to my friend. I was like, this is bonkers humanity right here, where contained within this room, this massive room, are the ability to destroy the world three times over. And you guys have elliptical machines scattered in and amongst these missiles.
It's nothing if not unbridled optimism. You know? That somebody who's worried about how toned their calves are is not worried about the world ending.
And on that note, I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, the author of the Webcomics Handbook and the creator of Evil Inc.
And I'm his pal Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of the comics documentary Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave, let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. And I got to tell you, this show is going out live right now to our Comic Lab pals over at patreon.com/comiclab. The Live Gab group gathers every week for the live stream of the show. And there's a running commentary, running conversation, and back and forth Q&A with Brad and I in the middle of the show. And you can join us at patreon.com/comiclab. And if you happen to miss the live stream show, it is recorded and archived. So you are ready to go, even if you have to step away and miss the live stream.
Absolutely. So, Dave, I'm going to start off the show with our first question from one of our Patreon backers, and it goes like this. I released my comic a couple months ago, and like most indie comic creators, sales are difficult. One problem I'm running into is actually people I know personally who look at it in their hands, but always give me a look expecting me to give it to them for free. Now, I've done my best to find a cheap printer so that the comic is only being sold for $5 or $3 digitally. But whenever I mention the price, they politely hand it back. Keep in mind, I paid an artist a very reasonable page rate for this comic, and I know I'll be in the hole for a while, if not forever. But I have costs on this book. Friends struggling for money, I give them a web copy free, no problem. But am I crazy to be frustrated that just because they know me, they expect something for free in the form of a physical book? People I know who did pay had no problem with the price, but I guess the entitlement frustrates me. I'm probably overthinking my responses, but I'm curious, how do you guys feel about responding to this, explaining that costs are involved? I didn't crowdfund. This was a personal investment from savings to pay an artist and a printer. And David Kellett from Los Angeles, I'm telling you, I always got to be the bad cop on this show. This time it's your turn. You got to tell this guy what he needs to hear.
Well, I really want to focus on, there's a lot of emotions wrapped up in this, and a lot of expectations wrapped up on this. And
there's a whole onion here.
This is going to take us a couple of minutes to untangle, because there's both an unexpected sense of entitlement, and I don't think the question asker will like to hear which way it goes, and also a lot of unexpected very much expected insecurities about our art, about our friendships, about our value, and about validation, which Brad and I 100%. So let's get into it. And unfortunately, on this one, I think you're not going to like my answer. So let me get started here. So you had said, is it weird to get angry at the entitlement that they want it free? And I would like to unpack that specific sentiment first, because it I think will unlock everything else we're going to talk about today, which is the entitlement that's being expressed there, I think truly is your sense that they have to, that they should, that they need to buy that comic from you. They don't, they shouldn't, and they don't have to, is the response there. They are your friend, which is a social pact of hanging out, of being there for each other, of enjoying one another. It is not a pact of a commercial exchange where, because I am Brad's friend, I have to contribute to his mortgage. That's not how friendships work. And so, even though you have made a big swing and are chasing your dreams and your comics, it's not your friend's responsibility to buy your comic from you. They don't have to, they shouldn't have to, and they shouldn't be made to feel that they have to. I will tell you that I have found great contentedness in setting up an expectation in all of my friends' groups where no one has to read it. And in fact, I actively try to avoid people in my life reading it. Yes. But those are probably more for personal subjective reasons, so we don't necessarily have to go into that. But I just want to say that the entitlement here is actually this sense that your friends have to or should want to buy this from you. I have many friends in many creative endeavors. Actors, writers, cartoonists, painters, sculptors, musicians.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have to tell you, all the ones that have found success in their life and have found a certain modicum of peace in their art making, none of them expect me to come consume their art or expect me to buy it or expect me to support it financially. Brad, that's my first swing. What do you got for us?
Yeah. And I we're going to get to this. We're going to try to rip the Band-Aid off on this so it hurts less. But you do need to hear this, because you're going to start losing your friends if you keep this up. Right. They're going to stop inviting you to the parties because you're going to be like that friend that's selling that that multi-level marketing stuff. And every time you come over,
oh, Brad, speaking of which, I got to tell you, I have an acai berry juice that you've got to get in on, Brad. This is a no lose proposition. I'm going to sell you a crate of this acai berry juice and you're going to help sell it. And Brad, we're going to make millions. It's going to be great.
And the important thing is we get in on at the bottom and then right. Everybody comes in. Just like an NFT, we get them at the bottom, exactly. And then everybody else is the sucker.
Brad, it's women's yoga wear. You're gonna love it. It's not a multi-level marketing scheme. Nope, we're gonna sell these yoga pants. We're gonna do amazing, Brad. We're gonna do amazing work. But yes, I 100% agree with this. That if you keep on this path. Even to Brad's extreme of like losing friends, even if you don't lose them per se, boy, it'll be a craw that'll get stuck in their teeth. There is that I don't like hanging around with Dave Kellett. He's always pushing his comic on me.
Yeah.
Because here's the fundamental truth. Even if it's a good comic, and we'll get to that in a minute, even if it's a good comic, your friends, for a billion subjective reasons, might not like it. They might not like comics. Yeah. They might not be comics readers. They might not like sci-fi or fantasy or adventure or romance or whatever genre you're writing. So it's not on them to feel bad about it if you have created either a genre, a style, a medium that they don't like to read. And so that's a really key thing to keep in mind in this situation.
Yep. And it might be an indication. It might be that your friends are they're put on the spot, and maybe they literally are like, I don't like this comic. That's okay. Listen, you made one kind of crucial misstep, and I'm going to come around to that. But listen, from what I'm gathering, it sounds like this is an early attempt at comics for you. That's probably a pretty good guess, because you're going out of pocket for this thing. You hired somebody and so on and so forth. I'm going to guess that this was an early attempt at comics for you, and it's okay. You've got a long time to learn, to do better work. And it might just be that this one attempt, one of your first attempts, just wasn't very good, and you need some practice to get better. That's it. that would be the first thing. If this was happening to me, that's the first thing I'm going to take myself aside and say is like, you know what? Maybe I didn't do a really good job on this one. Maybe I need to take an objective look at this. How did it work? Where did it break down? And use that to learn to do better on my next one. Now, I told you I was going to come around to something. You did make one mistake. And that is, I think, and it's important for us to talk about this. I think you took a shortcut. I think you tried to take a shortcut.
Oh, I think I know where you're going with this. Yeah.
Yeah, because you went out of pocket for this, okay? And you know, if you're a longtime Comic Lab listener, that Dave and I have had a few things that for 200 plus shows we've been saying, and for the next 200 plus, we're probably going to keep saying. And that went along the lines of number one, put your work out on the web so that's easily shared so that you can build an audience. Mm-hmm. The only problem is, as we've also said, that takes time.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And we've also said, build your own website, make that the hub of your experiences, and use that for audience building. But that takes time. And then we also said, crowdfund your books through Kickstarter, monetize through Patreon. But if you're doing merchandise, you need to do crowdfunding. But that takes time.
Yeah.
Okay. And my sense is that you went for the shortcut. You went out of pocket. You never go out of pocket on a book. Remember, we had an episode not too long ago where Dave and I listed our top mistakes. That was one of my top mistakes. Out of the many mistakes I made, I said I went out of pocket for a book. In my case, it was because Kickstarter hadn't got invented yet, right?
Right.
But I went out of pocket. And I said, that was a huge mistake. Go back and listen to that show. It was right at the top. And my sense is that you got excited and you wanted to take a shortcut. But remember, a Kickstarter, even if it fails, is free market research.
Yes.
And I think that market research might have told you that you weren't ready for a book yet.
Well, that's the point that I would love to springboard off of, Brad, because when you crowdfund, two different things that are related but have very different thrusts are happening there. One is you're doing active market research, and the market research is, does the world want this book? Or does the world express an interest in what they think that this book might be, right? So that's number one. And to Brad's point, that's massively important because you might believe with all your heart that this book, the world is ready for this book. The world wants to see this book. The world needs to see this book. That free market testing gives you a 30-day window and like, oh, yipe, not yet. It looks like the world's not ready for it yet. Doesn't want it yet. That's great. And then the second one is, okay, the world is ready for it. Oh, but this is great. We're going to make the book. How fantastic. And guess what? I don't have to be out of pocket on it. I'm not starting in the red. I'm starting in the black with this book. And that's a happier, more contented, better for your soul, creative place to be if you're starting in the black on the production of a book rather than starting in the red. Because what happens when you start in the red is nervousness kicks in, anxiety kicks in, long-term fears and also insecurities and validation kick in of like, ah, dang it, no one's buying the book. And also I need the money, you know, and it's a 1-2 punch of insecurity that hits. And that's why we're such strong supporters of the idea of crowdfunding a book.
Yeah, it really is important free market research. Now, all the other things that we talked about, the one drawback, and we're honest about this, it's something that we talk about very often, is it takes time. And in this particular case, having not seen your stuff, I'm still going to kind of guess that you needed that time. You needed that time to learn your craft, to learn how comics work, how to do comics well. Sounds like you're a writer. You're collaborating with an artist. That takes time to learn how to do that well. In other words, all this time that you would have spent building your audience, building a social media presence, building the website, building the product, all that time that you would have spent would have made this project better so that when you did get ready to crowdfund the book and put that thing out on Kickstarter, it would have been a better quality book and it would have been it maybe had a better chance of going over. It's the long road that we endorse strongly on Comic Lab.
Right.
It's disappointing as hell because I'm telling you, I've spent many years wishing that I could be famous by Friday. right? I'm telling you, I am not downplaying that at all. It took me, listen, Dave and I are both 20-year veterans of this. It took me a good 12 years at working a day job and doing daily comics, Monday through Friday, and often a Saturday comic. 12 years before I was even ready to think about doing this full time and start to seriously monetize what I'd done. And you know why that was? I needed 12 years. I needed 12 years of learning. I needed 12 years of audience building. I needed 12 years of trying to become a better writer and a better artist. There's no shortcut. There's no shortcut. And I think I'm going to suggest, and again, I don't know you from Adam, but I'm going to guess you might have gotten burned because you tried to take a shortcut. I want you to regroup now. Take this as a learning lesson because, listen, all of this stuff, even the money that you're out of savings fronting this book is valuable if you turn it into a learning moment.
Yep.
Learn from this and now go back and start and listen to some of our shows that we talk about this over and over. Start to use the web as a learning tool, as a publishing tool. And then in a few years, once you got this under your belt, then you can use it as a monetizing tool.
Well, I want to kind of bring in a metaphor of architecture here. I want you to think of old, like 1920s to 1950s Main Street Americana. And if you think about like a small town in Iowa, Kansas, you'll have these small one-story buildings that are brick, but they literally touch the next building right next to them on a main street, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. No architect, no engineer builds that kind of building so that the weight is being held up by the building next to it, right? And I'm going somewhere with this.
Yes.
If 30 years on, that building next to it gets knocked down, that little storefront, that little hardware store, that little barbershop, it has to be able to hold its own weight. It has to have load-bearing walls. It has to all be. Mm-hmm. So even though there's, what I'm getting at is, even though there's buildings on either side of it, you build it so that if both of those go away, that building is still standing. And what I'm getting at here is you want to build your art career so that it's not dependent on your friendships. It's not dependent on your family. Yes. It's not dependent on your social networks. It has to stand on its own. It has to be able to be supported by a wider public who is frankly anonymous to you and who you're reaching out to and entertaining. They don't know you. They don't know you from Adam, but yet they want to support the comics. That is actually how you want to support your career, because when the friends and the social networks and the family goes away, like those buildings in that small town Americana, you want your building to still be standing and to be structurally sound.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, there's no good way to put this. If the comic were really, really good, you'd be selling so many of them that you'd be thrilled to give them away for free to your friends. Right. Because money would be no object. If this was really good, it would be selling so well that it wouldn't matter. And that's okay. Listen, Dave and I have been there.
Oh my God.
You're not alone. You are on your way. And again, if you take this as a learning moment, you're going to get there quicker than you think. But you've got to be honest with yourself about what's happening at this moment.
And listen, both Brad and I will say we understand that this is a painful learning moment. Like I get it. This is a shitty feeling. You've believed in yourself enough to put the money forward. You went through and hired people. You produced the book. You should be proud of that. On a purely project basis, that is something to be proud of. You brought something into this world. That's awesome. But it's a shitty moment when you're like, ah, darn it. It's not really working out in the way that I hoped and looked at the ceiling when I was falling asleep and would think about and dream about that this would hit and everybody would like it. I have been there dozens of times, my friend. I'm saying this to you so that you do not feel alone in this moment. I have felt exactly what you're feeling, and I will feel it again. There's projects that I've done very recently that still sting because they just didn't take off like I hoped they would. And that is, in a way, it's kind of the pain of creation, is that there's no guarantees that what you're making is going to hit. But be proud of yourself that you did it. Learn what you can from this moment, because it is a learning moment, and apply it to the next project, which is going to be even bigger and better and go further.
Yes, absolutely. And we believe that's true. As we wrap up this topic, Dave, you mentioned something that I want to circle around back to.
Yeah.
And that is this. How badly do you want your friends not to read your comic?
Oh my God. All right. Well, now we're switching gears now to this is a very subjective Dave Kellett personal thing. I don't want anybody in my life to read my comics. If I had my choice, I would much rather, like, I want them to love me for me. That's fine. Yes. We get along. We talk about the topics we talk about. We hang out. We do the things. I don't want them to read my comic. I get uncomfortable when they read their comic. In real life, if somebody in real life comes up and starts talking to me in my comic, I accept the compliments and very quickly move it to any other topic that I can in their life or what things are going on. I don't want to talk about my comics and I don't want it to interact my real world. How about you?
I'm so happy to hear you say this because I actually get, and this might be my own psyche and my own inferiority complex. But when a friend starts talking about my comic to me, I almost feel like maybe, and this is unfair. I'll say this right at the start. I wonder if they're trying to manipulate me. Like, I know a good way to talk to Brad. I'll talk about his comic.
Because it a little bit feels like this. You know when a three-year-old is holding a toy and you go, what kind of train is that? Oh, my goodness. That a little bit feels like they're doing that to you. Oh, yeah, Brad, you have your comics. Oh.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I know it always comes from a place of kindness. I know that it's not. There's nobody in my life trying to emotionally manipulate me. Sure. I mean, but I always my defenses actually go up because it's like, all right, what's this guy after that he's starting to talk to me about my comic? Is he going to start to, he's going to start to try to sell me a can of juice next? What the heck? You know, it's weird. So I get uncomfortable. I don't necessarily want to talk about my comic with people I know.
I wonder how universal this is or whether we're just weird in art. I honestly don't know. Because to me, I feel like it's a very healthy separation, kind of a church and state kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Where, or like, in the same way that you don't talk about your sex life at work, you don't go in to be like, oh, the project's going along and let me tell you about Friday night. You know, like, I feel like in order for me to survive as a healthy artist, I feel like it's been a healthy choice to separate my personal life from the thing that I create. And I try to have never the two meet. And I have found that to work for me psychologically, but I don't know that that's a universal truth.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I just assume keep those two parts of my life separate. I agree 100%.
Yeah.
Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we're going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
When you do, you're going to get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, which is a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, we get it. No worries.
Yeah, listen, you can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Just leave a 5-star review and a few kind words.
That, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics.
Dave, it's time on the show for a few updates, and I hear you've got a barn burner.
Ah, Brad, if the fates are smiling and all the lights were green when we recorded this, hopefully by the time you are listening to this, my Kickstarter is live. And this is the dinosaur book collection, The Anatomy of Dinosaurs, that frankly was brought to you by Brad Geiger, because I was up in the air about whether to do Anatomy of Dogs or Anatomy of Dinosaurs. And I got to tell you, this is where listening to a friend is so valuable, because Brad was right. It was so fun to research and draw completely different types of dinosaurs. Yeah. Because if we're all honest about it, mechanically, every dog is kind of the same. I would have had to do different poses, but it's more color choices than mechanics choices. Mm-hmm. Whereas some of the dinosaurs that I drew are bonkers different in terms of biomechanics than the other ones. And so it was such a fun book to draw, and I had incredible fun writing it. Anyway, it's now kickstarting at dinokickstarter.com, and that'll be running for 30 days. So if you want to jump over and grab a copy, gosh, I'm really proud of the book. It's going to be gorgeous.
Oh my God. The stretch goals
are going to make it even better. So check it out over at dinokickstarter.com.
You actually got the URL dinokickstarter.com. Like, nobody else had taken dinokickstarter.com by now?
Are you being facetious? Because who the hell else would have Dino Kickstarter? Why would that exist?
Any number of people doing dinosaur-related Kickstarters, whether it was a dinosaur toy or a dinosaur Journal. I would think somebody would have bought that by
are
now.
You, I genuinely can't tell if you're taking the piss because would be doing a dinosaur Kickstarter? There's no other dinosaur 110 Kickstarter.
No one else is doing Anatomy of Dinosaurs, but to get dinokickstarter.com, you'd think that somebody, whether they were doing like a toy
I guess I see what you
film,
mean.
A film. Yeah. Or any number of things. No, I don't want you to think I'm making fun of you. For you to get dinokickstarter.com is kind of a triumph.
All right, well, I'll take it. I mean, sometimes you end up lucky with a URL. You're like, really? Nobody owns the word sponge.com or what? You know, that's not it. But yeah, I typed in dinokickstarter.com. There was no takers, Brad, as they say. There were no takers.
That's amazing.
And so that's running for the next 30 days. And so do check it out over at dinokickstarter.com. And Brad, I believe you have an update for us about a rolling stone and perhaps gathering some moss.
It was pointed out to me in the Comic Lab Discord that I had said on a previous show that you can build your audience slowly over time, quote, like a rolling stone gathering moss. It was pointed out very politely that the metaphor that I was searching for was I guess this is an adage, not a metaphor. But the adage is that a rolling stone gathers no moss. And they pointed out politely that maybe I had mixed my metaphor, but I would like to remind you, if you gentle listeners, that in webcomics, a little known fact is that we use a particularly sticky stone as we're gathering our moss. And as you know, sticky stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. So go out, gather your readers like a rolling stone, as long as you're using a sticky stone, and gather that moss.
This is where I thought you were going to go. Okay, now you're right. The actual saying is a rolling stone gathers no moss. But I think we can all agree that if you were able to corral Keith Richards and look at his teeth, they're covered in moss. I think we can all agree Keith Richards' teeth covered in moss. And so Brad's metaphor still holds up. All right, well, the other update we had for everybody, and this is fun because it's such a blast from the past. We had been talking on Twitter, I think it was, with a kind reader or two, and someone said, hey, this reminds me of the song Brad Geiger Stole My Woman. And I said, what? I have no memory of this. What is this song? And they said, and they brought in Chris on the Twitter conversation, Chris Straub, and they said, Chris wrote this brilliant song a decade ago called Brad Geiger Stole My Woman, all about how Brad stole Chris Straub's girlfriend. And I had completely forgotten about it. They found it in the sort of internet archives, and Brad wants to play it right now, and I think it's a brilliant idea.
All right, here it is.
Yeah, all right, I'm gonna do it like this. 1, 2, 1, 2. Brad Geiger, Tiger style, most professional cartoonist on the web. In my confession, I'll detail how we pale and flounder in comparison. Prepare to bear a witness like Mr. Harrison. 4-4 door, nah, I'm like a hatchback. Geiger in the stretch, Humvee, I didn't catch that. Geiger counter pun detected, I gotta backtrack. The one and only Bradley J, he brought a laugh track.
Brad Geiger stole my woman. Brad Geiger stole my car.
Brad, don't play me like that.
Brad Geiger stole my woman.
Brad Geiger stole my woman.
Brad Geiger stole my car.
All right. Brad, I understand the woman, but why the car? It ain't even a nice one. Don't even got OnStar. That's the Geiger threat, incorporated evil. You make the Geiger sweat, he'll perforate your threefold. It's revolting, this development, but I guess the master wick will punish me just for the hell of it. How indelicate.
Brad Geiger stole my woman.
Come on, Brad, this is ridiculous.
Brad Geiger stole my car.
Bring the car back and leave.
Brad Geiger stole my woman.
Brad always caught the last.
Brad Geiger stole my car.
Uh-huh.
Boo, Brad Geiger, boo.
the wonderful Chris Straub, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh my gosh. And a huge shout out of thanks to our friend Chris for letting us play that. Yes. Chris is over at chrisstraub.com and you can check out all his work. Brood Hollow, Star Slip, Chainsaw Suit. He's a fantastic creator, one of my favorites. And I had completely forgotten about that song in true Dave Kelly fashion. Whoop, completely out of my brain, but it's genius.
And in my defense, I've never stolen anyone's woman. That first of all, we got to make that clear. I've never stolen anyone's romantic partner.
I love that. That's a point of clarity.
I've borrowed a couple.
Hey-o, listen to that. Look at that. That's a joke writer.
Nothing. I'm getting nothing from that.
I'm more amazed that I almost stepped on your joke. I didn't see the setup coming. That's what. I also love that that song is dated just by the presence of OnStar in the lyrics. Yeah. That gives you a sense of how old that song was in terms of creation. But anyway, a huge thank you again to Chris for letting us play that one, because that is delightful. So I'm going to jump us into our next question, Brad, from patreon.com/comiclab. And this comes in from our friend Cyrus, who writes, "Hey, Dad and Brave, I wanted to get your thoughts and advice in regards to re-presenting older comics work. In 2012, I brought my first webcomic to a close when the story reached its natural logical conclusion and changed my website to an archive site. In 2014, as Brad has pointed out many times on the show, online ad revenue tanked, and I soon found that I was now losing money in the name of keeping this archive site up, so I made the difficult decision to take it down. I'm still quite proud of this comic, however, and it seems a shame that there's no way for anyone to see it. The first most obvious solution would be to kickstart a physical collection of the whole series, but it never did online readership numbers high enough to suggest to me that such a project would successfully fund. Fellas, I'm stumped. Any ideas on how to get my firstborn back out there and perhaps make a little bit of scratch while I'm at it? All my best, Cyrus." So, Brad, this is a good question. How do we help Cyrus get, let's say, the financials to support the re-presentation of old archive work that was costing too much money to have for free on the web?
Well, this is one of those things that mindset and attitude really gets you to where you're going, because what Cyrus sees as a negative, I see as a positive. Okay. And it's very interesting that so many times what we artists and creators have, we assume is not a good thing to have, right? Oh, right. My gosh, I've got this huge archive. What a terrible thing to have. And I look at that and I'm like, oh my God, sitting right here, three things immediately come to mind that you can do with this. And each one of them is wonderful, quite frankly. And by the way, Cyrus, if you think that you're alone, this is actually a conversation that I've had with Dave in terms of the Sheldon comic, right?
Oh, frequently lately, because I'm actively trying to figure out how to do this. So this is coming a perfect time in terms of our conversations. Yes.
So we've had this same conversation. You're not alone. First of all, number one, you've got a huge archive of stuff that you could sit down in a couple of weekends, and with social media scheduling software, you could put this out as social media content. And of course, remember, what social media rewards is not necessarily creativity. It rewards frequency, consistency, and significance. You've got, with a big archive, you've got that. You can post frequently and consistently, mm-hmm. and hopefully significantly. You've got the fodder for building a social media. All you've got to do is post them in a meaningful way. Again, go back to listen to some of those share thoughts and some of the ideas that we've shared in the past about social media. But you've got a social media engine right at the ready that you can use either for its own social media standpoint or as a part of building out your existing social media as posting this stuff. You've got lots of content that you could put out any number of ways, daily, hourly. You know, I don't know that I'd go hourly, but you could do a couple a day. You could gang them up and present them two or three mm-hmm. pages a day. You could do any number of things. You've got it literally sitting there to play with. All it needs to be done is reformat it and make it appropriate for the platform of choice. That's my first suggestion. You can go and use this as social media engine. What do you think about that?
I think that's great. My only caveat to that, again, saying that I think that's a great idea, is that automation has to be your friend here, because I don't want you, even though, here's what's happening. You have older work that you're proud of and that you value. And in wanting to represent it to the world, you're honoring all the work that your past self did, right?
Yeah.
That's good. That's great. That's what you should be doing. But you are wisely saying, I don't want to spend money to honor my past self, right? And that is also good. You don't want to have an ad-free site that's losing you money just so you can honor your past work. You also don't want to spend time honoring your past self because it's keeping you from doing current and future work. That's why I just want to put the caveat on there that Brad's idea for social media is a great one, but just make sure that it's a set it and forget it kind of thing, because I don't want you to spend either time or money on old work when you should be working on new work.
Yeah. And number two, here's another suggestion. When you tell me that you've got a huge archive of stuff and maybe you don't want to put it on the web because that site is costing you money, immediately the light goes off in my head and it says, you've got a Patreon exclusive. Oh my gosh, depending on how many pages this thing is or how this thing is formatted, you could drip this out as a weekly reward. You could make, if it's a short thing, you could make it a special offer. Everybody who's a Patreon backer at the end of the month gets the ebook. You could do that, quite frankly, a couple, two, three times a year and spread them out. And you'd be well within your rights. This is a Patreon exclusive. Everybody and their brother is knocking their head against the wall trying to come up with a Patreon exclusive. You've got one sitting right in your lap and you think it's a negative.
Yeah, my only caveat to this one, this is great. My color commentary, my color commentary is just caveats on this, is that I think that on this one, you want to strike the right balance of frequency because unlike social media, which rewards daily, almost multiple daily could be an amazing attribute, on Patreon, because this is an extra for a title that they're not necessarily backing, but which is a sweet bonus, I think Brad has it right, that it's something that you want to update two, three, four times a year, maybe tops once a month you release an ebook. I guess what I'm saying is I wouldn't err towards frequency. I would err more for bigger chunks that are released less frequently on Patreon is my thought. But Brad, I'd love to hear what you think.
Let me provide a little caveat to your caveat.
Yes, please.
Welcome to the Dick Caveat Show. Yeah. And hopefully I'm not being a dick, but listen. You can do a little bit of an interesting thing depending on how your current Patreon is. If you've got a sizable Patreon, right, you could actually expose those people to the new thing and then doing it on a weekly drip where you're putting out page after page. So you're kind of slowly building that up.
Right.
Might maximize the audience building impact of that. So you could actually piggyback this thing onto an existing audience.
Sure.
I don't really like looking at Patreon as an audience builder in general, but this might be one way that you could actually take and expose that old audience, or I'm sorry, your new audience to your old thing.
Well, I love that idea. And I think you can absolutely piggyback a couple of these projects as Brad's proposing onto the same path. So if you're doing the social media where you're releasing it daily for this social media thing, you could every 3 to 4 months say, hey, the past 3 months have been collected into an ebook, $5 for the ebook. Or if you're on Patreon, you get it for free. Right.
So
then you can 1-2 punch it, which would be a smart way to go. And Brad, what's your third option for how they can handle this?
I've got a third option, and we haven't even talked about Kickstarter yet, which is the no brainer. But I got a third one, and that is integrating Patreon into your website. And I'm assuming that you've got a website for what you're working on now. But if you take that and like I've done and like Dave has done with Drive, if you use a content management system like Tucheki, which we both strongly endorse, you can integrate Patreon's coding so that you can have Patreon only portions of your site. Now you've got a website that has a Patreon exclusive section right there at the top of the site, looking people in the eyes every time that they come to the site, something you can promote on social media, giving them a Patreon only portion of your site gives people reasons to go to your site, which is exactly what you want. Because again, you want that website to be the hub of everything that you're doing. Right. Having a Patreon only section there is not hard to set up, especially if you get a little bit of help from Tucheki.
Yeah.
Yeah, like both of us have.
Absolutely.
But I love having a Patreon only section to my site. I think it's a value add.
I will be honest. So I did it with Drive at Brad's recommendation. And it is, honestly, it is one of the best things that I have done in recent years. And I think Brad will attest to this, that I have called or texted him multiple times over the past couple of weeks and months saying, holy hell, Brad, this was such a great idea to split it out. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Because it's honestly like at one point, I think it had grown Drive 10% on Patreon in like the 5 or 6 weeks since it had launched. With that exclusive section on the website itself. So I super agree that it was really helpful with Drive. And I got to tell you, Brad's also been helpful in convincing me that it might be the right way to go in the relaunched Sheldon site, because I was going to just say, look, Sheldon has always been free. It will always be free. Ever thus, look at me walking into the future, always free. Yes. And Brad said, you realize, though, that if you're not making books anymore for Sheldon, and you're not running ads anymore for Sheldon, you are paying for people to have the right to read Sheldon. And you're probably paying a couple $100 for that size of that archive. Yeah. And I got to tell you, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I was like, holy hell, he's right. I'll be losing money on the Sheldon site if I'm neither doing books nor doing convention appearances for Sheldon, nor running Patreon, or, you know, nor having ads running. And so I honestly think I'm not sure yet how it's going to fall, but I think I'm going to have Sheldon be something like this. Either the most recent month, the most recent quarter, the most recent year will be free to read. And then the previous 4,000 Sheldon, 4,000, maybe 4,500 Sheldons will be behind a Patreon paywall. And it won't be huge, but it'll just be like, listen, if you want to read 4,500 more of these, that's on Patreon, and $2 a month, they'll get it for you.
Yeah. And it's not asking much. It's a very easy buy-in for somebody that wants to read that archive. And of course, we'll just throw it out there. You already know it exists. But once you've done all of that, then you do your audience building. Again, there's a theme to this show. Do the audience building on social media. Have that website set up so that you can do make that a hub of your activities. Use it on Patreon. Once you've started to get to a good point doing some or all of these things, boom, now you're ready for that Kickstarter. And you, again, you'll find out at that point, you'll know thumbs up or thumbs down. Either that market is ready for your book and you can put it out, or you get your free market research and you find out that still isn't the right time. Doesn't mean that it's never going to happen. It just means that this isn't the right time. And you go and find something else to do. Right. It's not that bad.
And much like we had with the first question asker and talking about in terms of timing and market research and the importance of crowdfunding for that.
Yeah.
You might find, like Brad said, that even if it's not the right time, letting that comic continue to run on social media for a couple more years, letting it continue to grow as Patreon exclusives or Patreon extras for folks. Yeah. You might find in 3 years, hey, you know what? Now it is ready to Kickstarter, and then you're off to the races. So even if it's not ready right now, that market research is invaluable to letting you know, hey, we were close. I'm going to give it a couple more years and we'll see how we do then.
Yeah. And just to tie this one up with a bow, another thing that is kind of a little bit of a thread throughout the last several episodes is that don't count websites out just yet. I know the conventional wisdom is that everything is happening on social media. And listen, that's where the bulk of the activity is. It's on two or three different sites, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, et cetera. Reddit, you can't count Reddit out by any means. But don't underestimate the importance or the effectiveness of having your own website. And as Dave and I are both telling you, it's still a big, big driver of everything that we're doing. And it's got a lot of usefulness beyond just presenting your work. And this topic right here underlines all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I will 100% co-sign this. And you might have noticed that by this point, we haven't mentioned Webtoons or Tapas or Tapastic or any of those kind of things. And I would just say, it goes back to my thought about I don't want you wasting money or time on this.
Yeah.
And the problem with bringing it to Webtoons is, yes, of course, there's a built-in audience. Yes, of course, it's plug and play. But on your end, it would involve slicing. And gosh, slicing takes a long time. And if it's a large archive, I really would rather, as a friend, have you focusing on the present and the future rather than slicing up past comics. So I personally think like that one's off the table. Brad, what do you think about that?
I agree. You'd have to really see some there to put that time in. You know what I mean? You'd have to really see a heartbeat. So Dave, in the time that we have remaining on today's show, I've got kind of a fun question that was sent in from our friend Tyler, and it goes like this. What are both of your dream goals for your career in comics? Is it a live action or an animated show? Is it a book tour across the country? When did you define that goal for yourselves? And what are your dream goals?
Well, my answer, I have two very different answers. And the first one, I think, might be less than satisfying for people that would want me to be like, I want to be president of the world. And because it's this, my main goal right now, if I could achieve it before I pass, would be I would want my main goal in life to be to do exactly what I'm doing right now for the rest of my working life.
Yes.
I kind of think that I have caught the brass ring, and now my goal is to hold on to that brass ring for the rest of my working life. How about you? What is your response to that question?
I'm so glad to hear you say that, because this is the dream goal. Doing this, being able to hold on to this. And by the way, that sounds like we're avoiding the question. You don't understand. If you think that this is a cop out, you don't understand. It's incredibly difficult to hold on to this.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Holding on to this thing, is incredibly difficult. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of stamina. It takes a lot of keeping your eyes open and being hopefully one step ahead on anything from business to publishing trends. This is difficult. It's why we love it so much. If this was easy, we would have gotten bored with it and gone to something else.
Yeah.
This as a dream goal, continuing to do this, I couldn't think of anything that would make me happier than this. But let's say if we take that off the table, if you could do one other thing that you would be like, I always, maybe not a dream goal for your career, but just like I always wanted to do this and it would be fun. What would it be?
Well, when is this, I wouldn't want it to be like a George R. R. Martin when it gets when a story is adapted before it's finished in its pure form. But if Drive finishes in a satisfying way, I wouldn't mind shopping it around Hollywood for either live action or animation. I think that would be fun, because at that point, I will have said everything I wanted to say with it. It is complete. Mm-hmm. It is cohesive. It's a unit. You know what I mean? No one else can influence it. Because I think a lot of people don't realize, our friends specifically don't realize what's happened again and again. When you sell a project, it is no longer your project.
Yes.
In fact, you are now a very junior partner on that project, if you are consulted at all. So it's happened with TV. It's happened with film. It's happened with video games that friends have optioned their work. Or rather, other people have optioned their work, and it is no longer there. Everything from the title changes, the character changes, the motivations changes, the setting changes, the style changes. And we've all seen that. I mean, all you need to do is look at how different Men in Black is from the comic book, or, literally any comic adaptation that you can name. There's been five or six where you're like, wow, they nailed the feeling of that comic book, maybe something like 300. But it's more often it's a case of like, yikes, that is so different from what the author put down on the page.
Yeah,
that I would want to finish Drive so that I had my own stamp on it. I would want to retain the publishing and printing rights, and then piggyback on whatever the TV and film does with it, and let them go their own way. Because remember, those are completely economics aside, that's a whole different set of artists that want to put their own stink on it. And I get that. I understand that as an adult. So it's going to be very different. But anyway, that's where I would like to see that go in the future. I don't have to have it, though. Again, just a reminder, I'm perfectly content with my main goal being doing this for the next 20, 30 years. Brad, how about you? What would be your goal if you had to pick one?
I'll throw this out. You mentioned it as we were doing pre-show warm up, and it reminded me how much I do like this idea, and that is a cross country road trip, right? Where you get an RV, either you fly out to Philadelphia and we drive to Los Angeles, or the same thing in reverse. And just the idea of hanging out, even bringing the kids along so we can stop at roadside attractions, you know, on the way, stop at a couple conventions along the way, or do a couple signings, and record just a ton of podcasts from behind the wheel.
Right.
I just, there's that great American road trip idea does have an awful lot of, it has a lot of great possibilities, I think.
Oh, I'm Brad. I turn like into a 10-year-old when we talk about this, but the idea of, yes. I mean, listen, every once in a while I get stuck on those van life sites where you're like, oh, yes. I would modify the bed this way. Oh, I'd convert the van to do this. And I don't necessarily want a van life. What I want is like a good size RV. I want my kids to be in college, so they're off enjoying themselves. And I just have a friend or two. Maybe I even pick up certain cartoonists for different chunks of the road trip.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Like, I'll pick up Brad in Philadelphia and I'll drive Brad to Michigan to see his family. Right. And in the meantime, we would do stops along the way. We would do signings. We would record podcasts with different interviews with different cartoonists along the way. So that like when we got to Toronto, we would see Lar D'Souza or Ryan North, or we get to Portland and we do Erica Moen or Dylan McConnison. Right. And so that would be so fun to go around the US and Canada and just record podcasts, do signings, see parks. I think that would be amazing, Brad. That would be amazing.
It would be like Seinfeld's thing. Remember comedians in cars getting coffee? It would be cartoonists in caravans getting cranky.
Well, you know what? Okay, so one final. This is not a goal, but it's sort of like a delightful thought that flits into my mind every once in a while. When my kids finally go to college, one thing I want to do with my wife is, because when she's not show running, i.e. producing a show, mm-hmm. she's usually developing a show, which means writing a lot of scripts or writing a lot of, you know, sketches. That can be done from anywhere in the world, and my work can be done from anywhere in the world. So I would very much like a 10-year period where my wife and I are 6 months in London and we're working out of some rented flat, six months in Savannah, Georgia, and we're working out of some rented flat and also teaching at SCAD for a little bit. Or, you know, like that just seems so fun to me to be doing my cartooning career, but in cool places around the world where you're living the actual space, not just visiting the actual space.
Oh, I would love that so much. And there's a lot to be said for living in a space as opposed to visiting a space. Yeah. And that's a very different life. Speaking of which, you've been visiting our space for the last hour, and it's time for us to wrap it up until we visit your space again next week. You've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been my world-traveling friend, Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And my good friend Dave Kellett, co-director of the comics documentary Stripped and the cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and the newly redesigned Drive at drivecomic.com.
And the Comic Lab theme song is Used with Permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode was edited by our pal Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media.
If you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and you may hear your review featured on a future episode like this one. David, remember a little while ago that we talked about how it very well may be that Ziggy is the most underrated newspaper comic ever?
Yes.
You made a few comments about the psychology of Ziggy, and the question asker wrote back, and you're going to love this. I'm reading from the email now.
Okay.
Dave's insightful comments about Ziggy were spot on. My mother was born in the 1950s and grew up in a household that was not very supportive, to put it kindly. In the 1970s, my mom moved to the city and worked to pay her way through college all by herself. She was the first woman in her family to get a degree, and she was told in no uncertain terms that she was on her own after high school. Mm. My mom is quiet, shy, and very introverted. If Ziggy is all about moving to the big city and dealing with loneliness, then it absolutely makes sense why my mother, back in the 70s, would have formed an attachment with this character that she saw in the newspaper every day. Thanks for the randomly deep insight into my mother's psyche. I think I'm gonna go make her some Ziggy fan art.
Oh, that's really nice. That's really nice. And yeah, it's nice to see that cold reading of what Ziggy was in the 70s held true for your mom's her own story. So that's fun to hear. So thank you for that. And thank you for the kind words, Brad. And I really appreciate that very much.
Absolutely.
And on that note, I'm going to say Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that twice. Patreon.com / I'm Ziggy.
And I'm lonely in the big city.
I don't want to shop at bodegas anymore by myself. Where's someone for Ziggy? Johnson, we've got the signal. We've got to launch the missiles. Hold on, Captain. I've got just 20 more minutes on the elliptical, and then we can launch the missiles.
Wouldn't that be great if nuclear holocaust was avoided because Johnson had a cardiac arrest and fell over on the elliptical?
Oh, we can't launch the missile. Why? Because Private Smith was doing squats, and the squats are wedged in between the two missiles. Now they can't fire.
I'm sorry. Private Johnson is over there. He's got a Charlie horse. He's not going to be able to make it to the codes in time.
Can't hit red button. Pulled muscle doing squats.